Today we have the opportunity to talk to Marie Folio, life coach and author of the best-selling book, Make Every Man Want You. Her book has just been relaunched, and today we have the chance to talk to her about how to be so irresistible that you barely keep from dating yourself. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning. How are you, Lisa?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic.
Wonderful. Now, for our listeners out there, can you talk more about Make Every Man Want You and how is the relaunch different to what you already have out there?
Well, if you want, I can tell you the story about how this awesome book came about, and then we can go into how it's different, you know, this time around.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Version. Yeah. So Make Every Man Want You started as a little ebook about 8 or 9 years ago now. And I was first starting out as a life coach, and I had taken this course about using ebooks as a marketing tool for your coaching practice. And it was a 4-week course, and it was taught by an amazing marketer named Dean Jackson. And one of the homework assignments was to just choose a subject that you're really passionate about and that you love to learn about, and something that you have fun writing an ebook on. So I thought to myself, you know, what better than women and relationships? It was a subject that a lot of my new coaching clients were coming to me for, and I know I would always be fascinated to talk to my girlfriends about it, and I was always interested in it. So out of nowhere, or seemingly out of nowhere, the title, Make Every Man Want You, just appeared in my mind. And the moment I recognized it, I said, oh my God, that's brilliant. So I went online, I bought the domain, and over the course of 4 weeks, I wrote this ebook called Make Every Man Want You. Now, back in the day, it was a much different version. It was a lot of exclamation points, and it was just a very elementary version compared to what it is today. But it gave me an idea of what's possible and how many people out there are really interested in having great relationships. I put the ebook online. I started selling it. It was really fun. It was like my first foray into information marketing. But something was happening in my personal life. At that time, I was engaged to be married, and we were living in this tiny one-room studio apartment in the middle of Greenwich Village.
Mm-hmm.
And out of writing this book and doing all this inner work, I realized I didn't want to marry the guy that I was engaged to. And it was so frightening because I had this big ring on my finger. You know, I was building this business. I had all these friends and people that were expecting me to go ahead with this marriage. And I knew in my heart that I needed to get out of it, but I was petrified. I mean, we had all our money intermingled. I didn't know, you know, what people were going to think of me. I didn't know where I was going to live, what we were going to do with all the furniture. I don't know if you've ever been in a position like that, Lisa, but, you know, when you feel like you have nowhere to go, it can be really frightening.
Yeah.
And I remember waking up one morning and just saying to myself, you know, it was getting so painful to share the same space, and I felt like I was dying inside. And I knew that if I just could make a shift and get out of this relationship, that it was my truth and I needed to handle it. But, you know, until I did that, nothing else would change. So one morning I woke up and I just had enough. And I remember looking at him, and he was a great guy, by the way. He wasn't a bad guy. It just was clear that we weren't a good fit for each other.
Mm-hmm.
I told him it was over, and I took the ring off my finger. And of course it was very emotional, but something happened when I got that ring off my finger and I really told my truth. I felt like something realigned in me. It was as though all these lies that I had been telling myself, everything fell away, and I knew in that moment that I was never going to go back to squashing my truth. I was never going to live my life in a way that wasn't true to myself and true to what I really wanted. And I also made a decision. I said, you know, this is really painful, and I don't want to go through this again. I know that there's relationship information out there. If I could only find it, that it would make a huge difference in my life. So I took the ebook off the market. I literally took it off the line, put it on a hard drive, and I went about my search for finding really good relationship wisdom. Because I, you know, despite my life coach training, I even though it was good and I'm really appreciative of it, it felt like there was always something missing, as though there was like this missing link out there that even though I was starting to be successful and make some money, it just never felt right. It felt like there was this whole other possibility that, I don't know, I always felt like I should be further along than I was. You know, the money was never enough. I never really, I felt like a fraud. You know, here I was as a life coach, and clearly I needed some more help with my own life before I could start helping other people.
Yeah.
So fast forward, you know, maybe about 6 months, and I'd been dating a bunch of different people. And a friend of mine gave me a great little book called Working on Yourself Doesn't Work, and by authors named Ariel and Shia King. And this book really shifted how I saw things, because it was all about being in the moment, and it was all about getting interested in how your life is now, and also not about working on yourself as though you're some endless, you know, self-improvement project. And I'll tell you, Lisa, when I read that book, I read it all in one sitting, I knew that I had found that missing link I was looking for.
Yeah.
After, it was just amazing. Once I started practicing this whole new lifestyle about really being present in everything I was doing and letting go of writing in journals and having goals and affirmations and all the typical things that people do in an effort to get the life that they want. Once I let all of that go, my life took off in like every different direction. You know, just to give an example, I had always been passionate about dance and fitness, even though I never had any dance training. You know, never had any formal dance training, that is. I always used to go out to clubs and party. You know, very shortly after I stopped working on myself, I started teaching hip-hop, you know, which is one of my favorite styles of dance. And I started teaching here in New York. Yeah. And very quickly after I started teaching, there was a producer from MTV who happened to be in my class. She stopped me and she said, you know, you're amazing. We need a choreographer. Do you want to come in and audition? And, you know, we need someone for a show for the summer. And so I turned out that I got hired by MTV to choreograph and to produce and perform for a whole summer. And this is like 3 weeks after I started teaching. Again, this is with no prior dance experience at all, besides just a passion for it. And so, you know, once that happened, I actually met Josh, who is the person I'm now engaged to, and we've been together for over 5 years, and it's the best relationship I've ever had. I started making a lot more money. I re-energized my coaching practice, and it's just life really did a 180, and it was so fast, and it was so easy. And after about a year or two of consistently expanding into my life and having things happen so effortlessly, I knew that I needed to rewrite this book. You know, at the short time when Make Every Man Want You was online and selling, there, you know, I'd done interviews similar to this to promote it. And when I took it offline, I would get these emails, like random emails, Lisa, from people in Australia and people in London and people in the United States going, oh, God, I heard this great interview with you about this book, Make Every Man Want You, but I can't find it. So I would always send back emails going, oh, I'm sorry, you know, we took it down, it's being revised. But I was so busy with all of the work that was coming my way. I had gotten hired by Nike to be one of their athletic dancers. They have a Nike dance athlete, and I'm actually one of the first ones. So, you know, I was traveling around with Nike. I was doing fitness videos. I was working with executive coaching clients. So I had no time to rewrite it. And then one day, I got an email from someone in Australia, and that was it. It was like the straw that broke the camel's back. I said, okay, I can't disappoint one more person. So I decided in the fall of 2005 that I was going to rewrite this book, and that I had no interest in going to a traditional publisher, because typically that's like a whole year and a half more lead time. You know, you have to go write the proposal and then find an agent and sell it. And I knew that I could write it and that I could hire awesome designers and that I could just self-publish it and get this puppy out there. Like, I had no bandwidth to, you know, add another huge project onto my list, but I knew if I self-published it, I could get it done fast. And that's what I did. And in June of 2006, Make Every Man Want You got relaunched, and we sold close to 8,000 copies within a year and a half. So it did really, really well. And that brings us up to last year when I realized, wow, we're selling all these copies and women are loving this book and we're getting great feedback. That, you know, imagine what would happen if we had worldwide distribution, you know, if it was in every bookstore. So then I realized now it's time to go find an agent and go sell it. And so that's what I did. We found an agent and I sold it to McGraw-Hill. And just maybe 2 weeks ago, it's available now in bookstores. So now comes the big time to really promote it. So it's like a whole new experience once again.
That's wonderful. And congratulations on that, I just have to say.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you don't mind, Mary, if I just open up a little bit here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was engaged as well. And yep, like you said, he was a great guy, but I wasn't being honest to myself. And it was the hardest decision to leave him because friends were expecting you to get married, family was expecting you to get married, you know, the plane ticket was booked, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And it was something that I was living a lie. And it really is interesting that I see your journey now, because I remember I said to myself that I couldn't keep going down this path because I needed to find myself first. And I've sort of been on that, you know, self-journey discovery thing, working on my career, working on following what I want to do and all that kind of stuff. And you turn around and you tell me that, you know, that was exactly what you realized what not to do.
Yes. So it's interesting because I like what you're saying. There's two things that I hear. First of all, the great thing was that you recognized that something was off. That for you in your past relationship, that for whatever reason, you knew it wasn't the place that you needed to be. And that for us, for women, and for men actually, comes up as an intuition or a gut instinct or a feeling. And we've been so trained by society to override that with our logic. You know, if the guy is nice, if the relationship seems like it's going okay, there's not any major problems, you know, everything looks good on paper, most people are so used to forging ahead and not paying attention to how they really feel. So that was the first thing that I noticed that you did, which was excellent. And, you know, it's interesting because I don't want to get into semantics, but there's a big difference between going for your life and really getting invested in it as it is right now. So that may mean, you know, putting your foot on the gas of your career where you're really getting engaged in everything you're doing and you're bringing enthusiasm to it and creativity and you're doing new projects or you're reaching in new directions. That, I don't consider that working on yourself. But what I used to do, I had this idea, Lisa, that mm-hmm. there was something intrinsically wrong with me that I needed to fix. So I would go to all these different self-help books. I would go to do all these programs because inside there was an underlying foundation that something was wrong and that something out there was going to fix me. But then once I realized there's nothing wrong, A, I'm just listening to my thoughts. B, I am being caught in the conditioning of my past. And C, I kept operating out of the idea that my life right now wasn't it, and that at some future point it would get better, those were the problems. It wasn't about, you know, being enthusiastic about investing in my career or my health or my friends. I don't consider that a problem. It's more of the mindset about how you're doing it. Does that make sense?
I think so. So would you say that was the key insight that vastly improved your life, that inner shift? You said something about making a shift. Was that it?
Yeah, and the big shift, and this is a really easy way to explain it, the idea that this is it, that this moment, the current moment, the one that you and I are in right now, is all there is. You know, we've been trained to believe that life begins someday out there in the future, when we make $1 million, when we find Mr. Right, when we finally start our own business, when we lose 30 pounds. Fill in the blank. Most of us have been conditioned to think that life's going to begin at some future point. The problem is, when we accomplish those goals, if we do, they're never satisfying. It's always about then the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And if you're constantly operating like this moment isn't it, like some future moment's going to be better, guess what? Your life sucks. It's never good. There's never any satisfaction. There's never any joy. There's never any peace. There's never any well-being because you always feel like you're not doing it right. So my big shift was to recognize that this moment, the current moment of now, is all you ever have. And if you want to just break it down a little more, you know, when the future comes, Lisa, it shows up as a moment of now. It doesn't come and do like a tap dance and say, hey, I'm your future. Do you know what I mean? It shows up as a current moment of now. And the past is done. It's just a memory figment in our imagination. So the only real place to invest is right now. But if you're constantly complaining against this moment, like this isn't it, again, you're a very dissatisfied person. And no matter where you find yourself, you're always in the wrong place.
Now, I totally get what you said about, you know, living in the future and how you'll never be satisfied. But what about the other way around, you know? Being stuck in the past and, you know, you find yourself in a very odd position where you look into the future and you're like, oh, when I get this, life will be better. But then at the same time, you look back to the past and you're like, oh, wasn't that nice?
Yes. It's both. They're two sides of the same illusion. It's your mind. See, each of us have a human mind, Lisa, and the mind is designed to keep you out of the present. It's a survival mechanism. So it'll do anything it can to distract you from what's happening right now. Your mind will like to talk to you about the past and go, oh, weren't those the good old days? Mm. Anything to keep you out of now. And if you start to pay attention, and this is one of the things that I teach people how to do in the book, you can literally train yourself to really live in the moment, to live consistently here and take short trips to the future when you need it. Like, of course, if you're planning a trip, you know, you're setting up some business structures, of course you have to look into the future. Those are for practical reasons, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the habitual nature of most people's minds where they're never fully where they're at. They're either fantasizing about the past and usually in comparison to this moment as though this moment sucks and the past was better. Or they're comparing this moment to the future, thinking that this moment, again, sucks and that the future is going to be better. So it's really about recognizing how often we all leave what's happening now to focus on what isn't, which if you stop and really look at it, it's total insanity because the only place your life can be happening is now. The only place that you can be irresistible, it's the only place that you can meet people, it's the only place that you can experience love or fun or adventure or anything. So it's really this interesting shift. I always talk about it like there are two parallel universes. You know, on one side, you're constantly engaged in your mind and you're beating on yourself and you're thinking how you should be farther along by now or you're comparing yourself to other people. And the experience of life when you're operating like that is very dissatisfying. Then you can jump over into what's called the world of transformation or being present in everything you do. And all of a sudden, things get really easy. They get really exciting because all you have to handle is what's in front of you. It's a very different way of being. You know, and if you've ever heard of Eckhart Tolle or The Power of Now, you know, it's a very similar style of living. The way I talk about it obviously is in my own language and from my own perspective, but there's a lot of dovetailing between those philosophies. And one of the things that I often hear from my readers and from my audience is they love the idea of Eckhart Tolle, and I think he's one of the most brilliant writers that's ever lived. I think he's fantastic. But some of my audience, they just can't hear it from him. You know, like they think it's a little too dry or they think it's a little too heady. So they'll enjoy Make Every Man Want You just because, you know, I happen to speak how I speak, which is in very day-to-day kind of language.
Yeah. So how do you train yourself to be in the moment?
Well, there's a couple things that you can do. One, you have to learn some key principles. And one of the principles you got to learn is about resistance. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard this, Lisa, but anything that you resist will persist and grow stronger. And it's just something to recognize. And here's how this is useful. If you find yourself having thoughts Oh, I wish I wasn't single. I shouldn't be single anymore. And you resist the fact that you're single. You actually hold being single in place. It's very interesting. And we don't have time to go into all this now, but that's just a little taste of one principle. The second principle is that no two things can occupy the same space at the same time. In other words, you can only be exactly as you are in any given moment of now. So if you start to pay attention and notice where your attention is at, if, say, for example, you're at work and you're sending an email, but your mind takes you off into a fantasy future and you're no longer sending email, but you're thinking about what you need to do, you know, 2 weeks from now. Well, in that moment, you're not really present. And if you can just catch that you've left now and you've gone off to follow a thought somewhere off into the future, the very instant you catch it, you can bring yourself back to doing whatever you were doing fully and completely. So it's about training yourself to bring your total attention to whatever's in front of you at this time. And all it takes is awareness. And once you start to catch how often you're not present for where you are, that's the beginning of having it dissolve. Does that make sense?
Yep, it makes total sense. But I just want to know the bridge between being and now, being in the now, and how that attracts the man that you want.
Well, think about it. Who would you find more attractive? A guy who was walking down the street who had a very scrunched look on his face and you could tell he was worried about what was going to happen at some future time and he was rushing from place to place? Or would you find a guy more attractive who was fully there, who is looking around, who is smiling, who is actually engaged with his environment? Which would you find more attractive?
Definitely the latter.
Right. So it's very simple. It's almost deceptively simple, but it's the most powerful thing in the world. You know, there's a quote by Einstein that says, when the solution is simple, God is answering. And I love that because I really think it's true. So, you know, being present, here's the thing. Most of our stories about how inadequate we are, how unpretty we are, how unworthy we are, they only exist if you follow thoughts in your mind. If you're fully present, like you and I are talking to each other right now, you have no attention on any kind of perceived faults. You have no attention on your story from the past about who you are and what you can't do or what you can do. You have no attention on any of your perceived flaws. They don't exist right now. When you're present, you're fully capable, you're fully alive, you're having a good time. There's no attention on worries or stress or anything like that. It's only when you leave this moment that's when all the problems come into place. So the whole trick is the more you train yourself to be here, the less problems you have, your quote-unquote neurosis melt away, and things just get really easy.
So effectively, it's just about being happy every single moment of your life.
Right, because it's the big joke. Now is really all there is. It's very cool. It's a subject that is so rich, and it really is a lifestyle. You know, we talk about it and Make Every Man Want You, and people get it because there's lots of different examples, and, you know, we come at it from different stories and things like that. So it's really a good time. Plus, it's like a laugh-out-loud book, and I personally love to laugh, and I love to have a good time. So I wanted anything that I write to be, you know, lighthearted.
Yes.
And that's the other thing. It's like most of us are so serious about having a great life. It's like the middle word in enlightenment is light. You've got to be willing to have a sense of humor about yourself and your life if you want it to really fly.
That's great. And you've been applying this you've been applying this mind shift for the past 7 years. Is that right?
Yes. Once I found it, Lisa, it's the only thing. I can't get sucked into any other mentality because it just doesn't work. It leaves me feeling like crap. It's like people are like, oh, Marie, you know, you should really check out The Secret and this whole stuff and visualization. And I'm like, oh, it doesn't work for me. It really, and that's not to say that it doesn't work for some people, but so many of my clients and my audience have come to me and they said, oh, thank God that you are telling us that it can be really simple, because all the things that everyone else says is supposed to work, like visualization and goal setting, it leaves people more confused and frustrated than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that because, you know, sometimes when you feel you're in an overcomplicated situation, you look for an overcomplicated solution.
Yes, absolutely. And our minds are built on complexities. Our minds love to make things more difficult than they are. It loves to find all the possible problems and complications, and, you know, that's what it lives on. And your being, your soul, whatever you want to call it, that essence of you that doesn't reside in your mind, very clear. It's very simple. You know, when you're really engaged in something, whether it's a coloring book, a sport, you're creating some project, and you're really there and your total attention is there, it's easy. It's fun. You feel really alive. You feel really engaged. Well, what if your whole life could be like that? And what I'm saying is that it can be. You just got to be willing to practice and build your in-the-moment muscles.
Yeah, you know, I think you were saying, you know, when you mentioned coloring book just now, it just reminded me of children. Children live in the moment.
Well, yeah, and you know what happens is we start to get enculturated by the folks around us. So we're around all kinds of big people who are thinking, who are constantly worrying, who are stressing. So, you know, when you pop out as a little baby, you're just there. And then slowly over the years, you start to absorb all of the habits and all of the cultural norms of the people around you. And I don't care where you are on planet Earth. Most people think a lot. Our parents think a lot. And that's not any kind of blame on them, because guess what? Their parents learned from their parents and their parents all the way back through time. And if you think about it, you know, in the past 50 years or so, for most of us, especially for you and I, you know, we're pretty blessed. We have food on the table. You know, we're sitting here talking to each other over a computer. So we have all these luxuries that, you know, again, just maybe like 100 years ago, our ancestors were struggling to put food on the table. You know, unless you came from an extremely wealthy family, then times were hard. You know, everyone had to worry about how to take care of each other and how to make it through the winter, how to figure out, you know, how to feed the kids every day. So the mind is conditioned for survival. But now there's another possibility. Like, we've gotten survival down. Now let's start using another part of us for well-being. And that well-being can extend and help solve a lot of the world's quote-unquote problems. We just need to come at it from a different perspective.
Now, if I may ask, how much of ego would hold someone back from living in a moment? What I mean by that is, you know, we were talking about overcomplicating things, and then we think we want to have an overcomplicated answer. And how much of ego would stop you from looking for a simple solution because it's so hard to admit to yourself, oh, duh, it was this easy.
Right. Oh, I love that. That's the embarrassment factor. I always call that the embarrassment factor. It's like, you know, most of us can spend, I know I'll speak for myself, I spent an enormous amount of time and energy and money and doing all these different workshops and, like, you know, waking up every morning and meditating for 30 minutes and then writing in my journal and, you know, doing all this stuff. And then when I realized, oh my God, there's this whole other way, and it's so easy, there was the embarrassment factor. But if you're really interested in having a great life, and here's the other thing, I'm just gonna sidetrack for a moment. One of the other things that I teach in the book, that I teach everyone that I know that's interested in listening to me, is the fact that you have a mind, but you are not your mind. You're also not the thoughts that you think in your mind. It's like each of us have this little radio station up there called WKRP or crap, because it plays the same stuff over and over. And have you noticed that? Have you noticed that the voice in your head that calls you Lisa when it's being kind and it calls me Marie when it's being kind?
Yeah.
It says the same things it always says. You know, Dr. Deepak Chopra, he cited a study that says, you know, we humans think 98% of the same thoughts that we thought the day before, which means that they're 98% of the same thoughts we thought the day before that, and the day before that, and the day before that. It's just recycled crap. So when you ask about the ego, I call the ego just like the voice in your head or your mind, just different terminology. If that thing's not you. And one of the techniques that I teach people is how to really, you don't have to listen to that thing, because most of what it says is repetitive, it's toxic, and it has no bearing on reality. No bearing on reality.
So how do you turn off your mind?
Well, you can't turn it off because, first of all, it saves us. You know, if you're in the middle of a busy city, that voice can say, "Watch out, bus," you know, and it saves you from being flattered. So you don't want to turn it off. It's not a bad thing. But you've got to be willing to notice that it's not you, and you can't believe what it says. So if you start paying attention, you'll notice how repetitive the voice is and how complaining it is. It's constantly complaining. It's too hot. It's too cold. I can't do this fast enough. You know, and once you disidentify and recognize that that thing's not you, that it's on autopilot, when it acts up, you don't have to take it so seriously. You can listen and go, okay, thanks for sharing, and you redirect your attention to what's actually happening in front of you. So in any given moment, Lisa, you're either listening to the voice in your head or you're engaged in what's happening around you. You're engaged in this moment in your life. So that's a really good tool for people, because if you're lost in your thoughts and you notice you're lost in your thoughts, you don't need to do anything about it but shift your direction. That's why I always think, you know, when people are like, oh, you have to control your thoughts. It's like, bull crap. You cannot control your thoughts. Those things happen. They happen on their own. The name of the game is not to control it, not to stop it. It's simply to redirect your attention. I'll give you an example. I don't know if you've ever cleaned your house or cleaned your apartment and you've had the TV on in the background. Sometimes, you know, you get into really cleaning a little corner or a little nook and cranny, and all of a sudden it's like you can't even hear the TV anymore. It's faded so far into the background because your attention was so fully engaged in cleaning that that TV voice just faded away. Well, that's what happens when you discover how to be fully engaged in your life. It's not that the voice ever gets turned off, but it fades so far into the background that it becomes insignificant.
That level of concentration, can people mistakenly describe that characteristic in someone as being absent-minded?
You know, I don't consider being engaged. See, there's a difference. People always think that I'm talking about focus, where it's very narrow. Do you know what I mean? Like that there is almost like someone has blinders on. And it's actually the complete opposite. When you're really engaged, you have full awareness of your environment, but you're not complaining or talking to yourself about things that don't matter. You know, it's like you and I could be talking here, and we are, and someone comes into my room, you know, Josh, my fiance, who's in the other room, and he walked by, and I noticed he was here, and then I quickly shifted my direction back to you. So it's like I'm not oblivious to him. It's inclusive. Awareness and being in the moment is very inclusive of your environment. But it's, again, it's like we're talking about, in a way, the untalkable. Like, you know, it's so hard to describe something. It's like, how do you describe your spirit or how do you describe your soul? And my best attempt here is to give you and to give our audience some tips and some clues on things that they could try. And you do that often enough, pretty soon, you're living more of your life directly and less of it in your head.
So is this the key that every woman can use to unlock and become rich, happy, and hot?
It's definitely one of them. You know, one of the things I've been really excited about lately mm-hmm. is discovering the balance between being in the moment and also being a really powerful, creative, entrepreneurial woman. You know, and when I say entrepreneurial, I don't necessarily mean that, you know, you need to want to own a multi-million dollar business, although if you do, that's great. But even, you know, I have clients that are in the creative arts, who are actresses, who are writers, you know, any type of person who wants to create things that isn't interested in working in like a traditional setting. I think that there is such a fascinating path where it's about discovering how to be fully where you're at, and then also, oddly enough, discovering how to set yourself up for success in bigger and bigger ways. So how can you create deadlines in the future, you know, like, oh, we want to get this project out by June 1st, where you're not thinking that that project is going to save you, that, oh my God, once I get this project done, my life is really going to begin, and at the same time, be really excited about growing your business. So that's, you know, we're still forming things, but the whole idea of rich, happy, and hot for me is I want to train women and any men that want to join us in not only living more fully in the moment, but in creating and running really amazing businesses that serve themselves and serve the world. And I think that it's really possible, and it's a combination of, you know, shifting your mindset to being present, but then also using really smart marketing and really, you know, some really smart systems to build a business that just reaches millions and that changes lives. So that's where we're going with Rich, Happy, and Hot. And yes, I do believe any woman who wants to can become rich, happy, and hot.
And does your advice also apply to men?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Lisa, we have a ton of men, not only that are on my list, but that have read the book and that have written in and just said, you know, this book rocks. It's, you know, it's not just for women, it's for men too.
So are you going to launch Make Every Woman Want You?
Probably not, just because I don't have a passion to do it. But, you know, when men read it, it's the same type of wisdom, because I believe humans are humans. And of course, there are some differences between men and women, but I really like supporting a more global view. You know what I mean? And then just more, hey, let's take a look, because men have the same type of insecurity issues. They have the human mind just like we do. So it absolutely applies to men as well.
Well, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
Oh, well, the book is available. It should be in bookstores all over the place. It's actually in the UK, in Australia, parts of Asia, all throughout the United States and Canada. And we have a great little irresistibility quiz. If you go to makeeverymanwantyou.com, yes, awesome. You can see some video clips. There's success stories, but there's a fantastic irresistibility quiz.
An irresistibility quiz.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
So any tips on how I can pass that?
You know, it's cool. I created it so it's not pass-fail. All it does is give you a custom profile, and it gives you some tips that you can immediately implement to bring a little more irresistibility into your life. And you also will find out exactly what chapters of the book to pay special attention to based on your answers. So you get a nice little custom action plan. And also, what people will get once you take the quiz, I've created a free 4-week audio coaching program that just supports people through staying engaged and staying in the moment, because, you know, it really is a lifestyle. It's like you can't go to the gym once and work out and then say, oh, you know, I'm done for 10 years. So we've got some other free goodies at the website, and that's all at makeeverymanwantyou.com.
So, Marie, thank you very much. It has been a wonderful interview, a good eye-opener for me as well. And for the listener who wants to have more of your insights, they can get a copy of your book, Make Every Man Want You, just by clicking the link at the bottom of the interview blog post. Once again, Marie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. It has been a great pleasure.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Have a great afternoon.